All right, let's get through some things that nobody outside of 34 really gives a shit about.
Yeah, so apparently all the servers got twice the fun tech, and we got half the progression.
Andy, remember back in the day when like we would go to put out some thoughts and tech would just like cut out you and me and just leave his?
Yeah, yeah, that was the best.
Let's nerd out on some math with Darius and Boom on the strike teams.
All right, and if anybody else wants to not hear about the math, you can always join me in the after party where we will not be discussing math.
Dude, math is fun. Was it Neptune that rains diamonds? I want to go there and just scoop up some rain.
Might be Uranus, I don't know.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Trek Talk. I'm TechMan16.
I'm SK.
Andy.
I'm Boom.
And Darius is joining us today. Darius, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here, too. All right, let's get through some things that nobody outside of 34 really gives a shit about, and that is 40 Eclipse Epic Armadas that have not spawned in almost 3 months on Server 34.
Your gear after this again.
Yeah.
I have put in a ticket and all of my communications is available at the Server 34 channel on our Discord. I do want to say that I am so glad Scopely outsources their customer service, because their customer service has no fucking clue what in the fuck actually happens in any game whatsoever.
They don't even know what an Eclipse Armada is.
They do not. Their response, if you read through the message, is like, have you tried hitting any of those other armadas to see if an epic spawns? And I'm like, we've been doing that shit for 3 months.
You mean on a server with over 1,000 people? Nah, man, we never crossed our mind.
Again, these people are like the people that grade essays from SATs. Like, they don't know who the fuck you are. They don't know what you're capable of or what your vernacular is. They're just like, oh, is it in a certain structure? Does it fit in the box? 3 out of 5. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
The funny part is people like that, these customer service guys, which are like complete idiots. 99.9%.
Well, also, like, these are the same kind of people that review your digital imaging from your healthcare provider that they send overseas to have another professional look at before your doctor looks at it so they can do preliminary evaluations. It's a very offshore-y, outsourcing model where there's no engagement with the original content. They have no clue who and what this game is about, or any of the games. You could be calling about Scrabble.
Well, they'd have to know something about the game to reply to it. Like, just the fact of them saying, well, have you tried hitting the other armadas? I mean, where are they getting that from? A script?
They're getting it from their knowledge base, which has drop-down menus.
Very well may be scripted, or they may have gotten a simple, like, you know, 2-hour introductory, hey, here's the game fundamentally, which would literally just be like, okay, people hit hostiles, here's armada, like, but usually when you outsource and having done this with IT and using offshore, like, yeah, you give them just simple, like, you're our tier zero people. You just get the initial, consumer complaints or internal complaints, depending.
Maybe we can find out where the call center is and go send V-Ready.
Well, they probably actually have a couple call centers because they do like to
follow the sun.
But yeah, it's... There is very much going to be scripted. There'll be a basic knowledge base, and they may have gotten like a 2 or 4 hour introductory session in the game that's just a video.
They always choose an American sounding name out of a hat.
Hello, I am Steven.
That's what, yeah. Do not redeem it. Do not redeem it. What are you doing?
Oh my God. What are you doing?
I also like the fact that sometimes they pick names that's hard for them to pronounce.
Oh, right.
Which kind of boggles my mind. Anyways, here's my new theory. Madam Stargazer on Server 66 posted the fact that she's got 2 40 Eclipse Epics in her space.
They have ours. They stole ours.
Yes, exactly. We found it.
Wow.
They stole our fucking Eclipse Epic.
Send Scopely an update and be like, hey, never mind, we found ours.
Is it the 40 or the 45? Because I thought multiple 40s spawned.
40.
Okay.
we've never had multiple 40s spawn. We only had one.
That could be. I may just be misremembering.
Well, that's not true. Like, I've seen two 40s spawn before. It has happened.
It has happened. Like, they spawned on top of each other before, where we kill one and they're like, holy crap.
I've seen them spawn separately before as well.
You're right. Those are 40s. I was thinking, yeah.
This is not Penumbra, sir.
In any case, we haven't had those in 3 months, and so my stellar progress has just fucking hit a wall.
I mean, we've got two 40s in Lindstrom, but our Penumbra is also a 40.
What?
Oh, really?
You have three of them?
Yeah. No, sorry, there's a ship on top of it. Penumbra's 45, but yeah, we got two 40s in Lindstrom.
Yeah, so apparently all the servers got twice the fun tech, and we got half the progression.
They took our 40, and they multiplied it on other servers.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You guys always say for the greater good, you've fully embraced that.
Fucking Scopely, worthless used to a bunch of fucking moose knuckle dick fucking wads.
Very accurate.
Tell us how you really feel.
Moose knuckle dick fucking wads.
See, even Mars is upset.
I can go down the list, right? But then when DJs listens to this podcast, he's going to be like, wow, that is a really, really heartfelt, expletive-laced explanation of Scopely. And I dare think that somebody might use that on his show. So I will reserve. I will reserve saying something else. We love you, DJs. Thanks for listening. We love you. anyways, moving on to something that everybody else has been talking about is the Explorer Strike Team and how it counteracts the Interceptor Strike Team and how it works with the Battleship Strike Team. And for those of you who will probably listen to this when it comes out, Kirk's got a kid in the background and Handy's got a dog in the background. You will not hear what they have said, but just know they are in the background.
Like jazz music.
Will it get edited out?
Yeah, it will.
Because that's unfortunate.
Well, it's multiple tracks, dude.
Yeah, but it's part of our charm, is, you know, the kids in the background and the dogs barking and talking to them.
Handy, remember back in the day when, like, we would go to put out some thoughts and Tech would just, like, cut out you and me and just leave his?
Yeah, that was the best.
He'd be like, what they said was irrelevant, I'm cutting that out.
Well, it's your ADHD brains going off on a fucking tangent, talking about, like, purple grapes.
No, we would have good, me and Handy would have good conversations, and then I would go to this, I'm like, wait a minute, this podcast says it's only like an hour and 10 minutes, dude. We were on there for like 2 hours, and I go, and it's basically Tech going from fucking thought to thought.
There's only, I think, one or two podcasts that I really cut that out, but that's when you guys went on a, like, you wouldn't even see the road where the fuck you were talking about.
Look, buddy, at least we're not the ones having to fucking cut out Cat Williams quotes.
Wow. One time.
Yeah, but I mean,
you will never live that down, Tech. Sorry.
It's all it takes.
Whatever. Anyways, let's nerd out on some math with Darius and Boom on the strike teams.
All right, and if anybody else wants to not hear about the math, you can always join me in the after party where we will not be discussing math.
Dude, math is fun.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and mute the... you let us know when you're done with that math.
So, Explorer Strike Team, is it worth it? Yay or nay?
Since Boom had mentioned off before that, he hasn't done a lot of testing on this yet. I haven't done like a bunch of spreadsheet testing, but I can tell you if you do not have the other epics from the other two strike teams, Weiyun is not a bad get, right? Having one of these extra shot spammers is fantastic. It's just too bad that Weiyun is capped and the amount of extra shots he'll spam for you, unlike the other two who just, you know, take you to spam Sunday and there you go. You tell it forever. And it's not bad. If you have a really big explorer and they have a decent sized interceptor, you might beat it. But it's just not the same kind of abilities, right? You know, they're when you the text is very confusing on the abilities as well. It's not quite clear what they mean by two rounds for shot spam and three rounds for crit reduction and that pathetic bonus damage from Ricky Tikki Tavi. But it's just, you kind of see what they might have been thinking. Hey, these have a higher percentage values than the numbers from the interceptor team, so they might stay ahead of the interceptor team, except they just totally don't. Not after a few rounds. You get 3 to 5 rounds with the Explorer Strike team. And if you can beat up an interceptor with triangle advantage in that time frame with your base stats, because you can't put another guy on there to get better stats, you can't put a Kang on there to beat an interceptor up, you end up winning. If you couldn't beat him with your base stats in those first few rounds, you're just going to die. And that's fine. You'll do damage, but not versus the battleships, that's for sure.
No, you'll get crushed by a battleship. And yeah, across the board, the problem with the Explorer Strike team that I saw or see is absolutely everything is round capped. You also have the plus damage for the other ones, like the battleship bypasses shields, which is just good against every ship. It's better against some than others to a degree, because like an Explorer, of course, has a lot more shield, but every ship has shields. Bypassing shields always increases your damage by a significant margin. Whereas like Ika, whatever the frick his name is. So 55%, I have him at tier 2, but 55% increase in damage for 3 rounds. Not only is that not significant, given if you're of any level, you know, 50, 40, somewhere in there, you've got a lot of damage research. But as you continue, you will get more. Like, there's even stuff for in the Bajoran favors right now that increases base damage, which means that that officer, unlike all the other ones, actually suffers diminishing returns on their ability. And then, you know, as you were saying, Wei Yun, I mean, even his captain's ability is round capped. Like, so Dukat is just hull breach forever, but Wei Yun will only give you morale for 8 rounds. Like, why? What was the point of that cap? Like, seriously, why? And then, you know, his plus shots capped at 2 rounds is just nowhere near as effective as the way Dukat or Leon ramp up, as we mentioned. And then the 3 round cap for crit reduction is another thing where, okay, Explorers are meant to go directly against interceptors. Garrick doesn't have a cap, so he will continue to accrue plus crit round after round, whereas this will cap out at 3 rounds of whatever it you've got it maxed out to. But so you will slowly be overcome by the crits there. You don't ramp damage up fast enough, and not only that, but you'll end up, if for some reason it the fight actually continued to, you know, went that long, went past 8 rounds, well, once you lose morale with Wei Yun, your shots drop, whereas Gul Dukat's still ramping up. You have hull breach now. The crit starts applying again. Like, it has over, you know, it's overcome pawns. To me, the best or most interesting ability is actually pawns, captain's maneuver, because it gives you that 3 rounds. And I haven't done testing to see if. What is it with full synergy? What does he give you on that? Is it 70%?
No, not even close. Boom. So it's 10% base and 15% per side synergy max.
Oh, Jesus.
Right. Yeah. So your best case scenario is 25%, because you have to have half synergy to get Kelvin Kirk or the like. It does not work on base defense in my. I take that back. I've only tried it like 12 times, so I haven't had it proc, but I do not suspect it would work on station guns. It might. But it basically adds 3 rounds to the warm up time of any weapon, so you don't end up stacked with 4 rounds of shots in round 4, right? The round, let's say you have a firing pattern on a spendy fish, right? It's, you know, 4-5, 4-5. You end up with, in round 4, you get 4 shots. In round 5, you get 5 shots. It just picks up like it never started in counting in round 1, plus 3 rounds to warm up time. So in round 4, you get your first round shots. In round 5, you get your second round shots. So your auger goes off, your spendy fish goes off, or whatever. And it just proceeds from there normally on its normal firing pattern. I've had a proc on many ships, but I've never had a proc on a station yet.
Yeah. If that had a higher percentage, it might have made it, because you could even make an argument where, even though you get no morale, so the other things don't happen, if you could get close to 100% on delaying for three rounds, it might be worth it to put him as captain and just full synergy and ignore those officers and just bank on your ship's actual damage for three rounds being enough. But if we're talking 15% each side, because I hadn't looked into it, that's not enough. It's nowhere close.
If you have it pulled up right now, Boom, doesn't it require morale too?
No, his ability just requires you be on an explorer.
Okay, great. So that's the one that lets you do 40% if you want to stack all three. But
40% is not enough.
It's not enough. It's just not close to enough. I would take 60%, but I would really want 70 or better, honestly.
Yeah.
It is a great ability. It lets you punch up ship to ship with or without triangle in a lot of ways. That said, if you have disadvantage and you're not pushing through the mitigation of a battleship or the like, it's just not going to help you. You could put 25% with Charvenek, for instance. This doesn't require morale. But like again, you're not, especially once you get past, I don't know, maybe a 42 ship, 46 ship, you really can't push through their mitigation with one 1600% officer unless you're really just stats maxed, which even then, again, you're not. Those ships' base stats are not high enough unless you're working at a peer ship level with triangle advantage to push through their mitigation. It's just not. Yeah, I mean, three rounds is great. I love it. It's worked when it's worked. It's been funny, like, oh, this log is a novelty. I beat that guy who was, you know, had four more tiers on me or whatever.
Do you think that the Explorer Strike Team is really meant for the G3 epics where you don't need a Spock just for your shield regen?
It is much more effective G3 epic to G3 epic, although an Augur without the strike team will still beat the crap out of you. You will probably beat it if you get pawn to delay. But that's, again, you're dealing with three rounds of no attacks from them for them to, you know, hit you with their Augur in a couple of, in rounds four and five, and you're not getting any bonus shots in that time, right? Unless you have morale on the side, which you could if you try. But again, 25% then, right? So it's just a tragedy of nothings, right? The RNG is weak, and weak RNG is not the kind of thing that I put into play unless I'm really bored. Now, they're novelties. I'm going to try some 40% chances on some bases just for funsies while we're on the call. But it's it's just not as good as it should be to compare to the other two who are excellent. And La'an, who is just ridiculously excellent, and Ortegas, who is the queen of all things.
Let's talk about Ortegas here, because we before the show, we were talking about Ortegas, and she does a lot more than she is supposed to do.
Yes, and after Ortegas, I'd actually like to take a moment on Damar, too, who is also broken. But yes, Ortegas, rather than delaying for a round, which, okay, normally you think if I'm going to delay something, it means it's going to resolve the next round, but should not interfere with the next round as well. And instead, what happens is if for any weapon, basically I think it is the reload that gets canceled for that round, but it actually ends up the way that they're doing it is, so if you have a weapon that would typically fire every round, and you do something like what I did for testing just to see, is I put Ortegas on a battleship with Pike and Moreau to guarantee that she procced every time. And so it will absolutely eliminate a shot every other round, because basically what happens is, okay, because it says it'll delay the next round's fire. So round one, the weapon will fire. Round two, it'll get delayed. But in round three, you expect, okay, so this delayed weapon will fire, and also maybe your next one will go off. But it constantly gets pushed back around and pushed back around. It never actually resolves. And so you'll end up, if something has a firing pattern, so like we chose battles to extend it out as far as we could, and we had stuff go, you know, like 20 rounds. But, you know, even just looking at the first 12 rounds of these ships, where you would expect it to have a total of 24 shots of energy and like 6 kinetic, and instead you'll get only 12 shots of energy and like 4 kinetic. And even when you use her just in full strike team so that she's not proccing every round, you can still see that the next round's actions get canceled, and the round after that, they don't resolve. It's not that they kept getting just pushed infinitely due to additional procs. And her proc technically can't actually apply to the previous shot again. So yeah, but so you can see that it just never resolves. It gets completely canceled out and is gone, which is very different than what it reads. Because you think like, okay, at some point she's going to proc on these weapons or that weapons, and we'll get stuff pushed down, which will be a nice, you know, like not earth shattering, but it's a nice little bit of mitigate, because if you can push damage for even a round, you can potentially finish them in that round. That's sort of like, it does make a difference. Like even just pushing for a round makes a decent difference in damage you take, especially if you win the combat, because then their shots don't get to resolve if they blow up. But instead it's canceling it out, which makes it just a mammoth amount of damage reduction across the board.
Right, and what it feels like they're doing, Booms, they're reducing the next round's recharge to zero, or like a negative number or something, instead of making it two, right? Like they're doing something weird with their math that isn't the way that's intended, if that makes sense, right? If the carry forward for this would be two round recharge times, right? And then in the next round, it wouldn't activate, in the next round it would activate, and it would be subject to being delayed again by her, subject to her percentage chance to proc, or subject to Pike Moreau or Tragus, which is a whole terrible nightmare for base defense. But anyway, so, you know, it's a thing where I would expect it to work the way it works. When I started seeing, even in just some procs in random space with full or half strike teams that weren't using making Hortagus always work abilities, the shot count is exactly as you said. It's like it's just halved. Your every round shots are halved, and then your every other round or whatever are basically reduced by whatever percentage chance you're using. And it's intense. It's like eliminating damage. It's better than damage reduction, with air quotes, in that, you know, you don't get a small amount of damage through like you would with like an equivalent of a Chen. It just goes away. It's gone.
So you're saying her ability, and by the way, what Scopely does in their math is, when you're recharging, when you're warming up, it's like negative one. When you're recharging, it's zero. And then when you're firing, it's a one, right? And so that loop, that one to zero to negative one loop, it's broken with Ortega's in there, with her ability to with the delay, if you will.
I would say that's a really good guesstimate of likely what's occurring, but there could be other, like they may have done the math correct, but did not realize that they have some other control in there that does not let the weapon fire multiple times in a round, which is maybe why some of these abilities, instead of having the weapon fire multiple times, they just add shots to it. And so what happens is that delayed weapon fire, even though they expect it to resolve the next round, it doesn't, because its normal fire happens. Like there could be a number of things.
Wait. I think I know what's happening. I think what's happening is that no. Like the math itself is that I think what's happening is the weapon is firing. The delayed weapon is firing. But because you can't have two weapons occupy the same space with the same gun unless there's a multiplier factor to it, it just gives you the highest damage.
No. That's less likely from what I understand of how their weapons work to be the case. It's not impossible, because, you know, there are parameters we can't see on the weapons, like weapon speed and things like that, right? So these invisible parameters, that they're not the three that we can see when we look in the upgrade screen for a weapon component, are the ones we have to kind of speculate on. It's possible, Tech, that there is another thing, and only the highest damage would show or something. That feels unlikely to me, though.
What I mean is only the highest damage fires, whereas the math itself, what I would assume is that there would be two codes running for that one damage, but because it's something's weird where you can't add a shot, because it's not in the original coding to add a shot unless you have a multiplier function from another officer.
But it's the weapon fire parameter, which is a separate, like, again, warm up, recharge.
Yeah, because weapon's different than shot.
Yes.
Each of these could be feasible in a way, like we truly don't know. And there is no way for any of us to state with certitude unless we actually saw the code. But what we do know is that she is fully canceling out firing, not delaying it. And maybe their intention was that, but then they chose poor wording, because like if you you know, if you go to the airport and you're like, oh, what's going on with my flight? And they're like, oh, it's delayed. And you're like, delayed till when? And they're like, never. Well, we have a different word for that. It's called canceled. Like, but if they intended her to actually just fully cancel out the next round the way she's doing, I think people would have jumped on her a lot harder. Like, people kind of initially slept on Ortegas. They were like, oh, you know, I think Una and Leon, like Una, oh, the shield bypass, that's awesome. And Leon with the extra shot. And people kind of slept on Ortegas. The amount of damage reduction she does is significant.
It's phenomenal. It's basically 40% damage reduction, give or take, up to 60%, depending on what you're fucking with.
Yeah, it depends what you're fighting and how often, like, because if their firing pattern is, if there's something where they don't have a higher punching, you know, kinetic that fires every other, and instead they just do kind of shots per round, or most of their weapons are shots per round, then you're doing a phenomenal amount of damage reduction.
I'll tell you who this is really bad against. It's against a Newton, because the Newton is one of the only ships that does the three weapon component firing pattern every round, and it gets real screwed up real quick. And then when your big kinetic three shotter gets suppressed, you push that back, and it's a big chunk of your damage, right? It's about the equivalent of all three of the other 2x3 energy shots on your kinetics for the Newton, right? So it's with a four shot weapon component pattern, you end up with Ortegas being hyper effective. In battleship to battleship, you can't, without having an equally effective Ortegas and an equally effective Laon/Una working, you can't beat him. Now, that again, that said, yeah, she is eliminating the shots, Mouse. Yeah.
All right. Moral of the story, use Ortegas, use her often, use her a lot.
And use her on base defense.
Or use her on base defense. Boom. You want to talk about Mara? Because Mara's broken in the same way?
No. Damar. Damar on the Interceptor Strike team is actually broken as well. So if you sit there, so he's supposed to reduce crit against your opponent based on when you crit that opponent and they have hull breach.
You reduce their crit damage bonus.
Yeah. So if you take him and you do tests against, basically what happens is whoever fires first, they actually are at a disadvantage. Damar does not proc properly initially. And so what happens is, so like I'll take my Sanctus and I, you know, fighting a Northcutt. And so my firing pattern is, his is done by weapon, not by shot. So first round is three weapons. Second round is one weapon. Third round is three. You go and look in the battle log and I'll have crit on all of them. So say by round four, he should have seven procs. And instead, he'll have only five because I initiated the attack. And so what happens is, and especially it's interesting because when you face something with also a backloaded firing pattern that you initiate the attack. So like a Sanctus, if you initiate an attack on a Northcutt, the Northcutt will get all of its procs because you initiated the attack. And so by round four, even though it's only had five weapons fire, it will reduce your crit percentage to zero. Meanwhile, you'll have had fired seven weapons, but sorry, I said five, but with the Sanctus, you'll actually only get four. Each round you end up, if you initiate the attack, Damar will not proc for the first weapon each round for some reason. And so even though you'll have hit it with more, and so in theory should have reduced their crit more than they've reduced yours, and you should both be firing zeros for that round, you'll actually find that the Northcutt is still damaging your ship while you are spamming it with a bunch of zero damage shots. So for some reason with Damar, if you initiate the attack, he becomes less effective. And that's not how he's written or supposed to work.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, no. So far that I've actually seriously tested on, two of two strike teams are broken, at least in one way. I have not really delved into the Explorer yet.
So what you're saying is the battleship strike team is by far the most awesomeness because it works way better than it should. And then the interceptor strike team is poor awesomeness.
Because it can worse. Yes, it can't, like, if they attack you, you're golden. It doesn't matter. But yes, if you initiate an attack, it can work not as effective. And the other thing is, it's also much more firing pattern dependent, because you want for your interceptor strike team something that actually has a backloaded firing pattern. And the reason is because some of their abilities, like Damaris, for example, is based on crit. Now, like when I was talking about, you know, all seven of my weapons, round one, two, and three should have crit, that's accurate. But Garrick gives you 50% up front. And so you can absolutely have cases where if your three weapons fire round one, you're actually only having that 50% bonus to crit. And so you can miss on some of those weapons. And so you can also miss that. Whereas if you're firing most of your weapons round two, at that point, Garrick's kicked in a second time. You're at or around 100%. And so you're going to get the full synergy of the abilities of that strike team. So just in general, it's also better, you know, like the Pylum and the Sanctus, it has that front loaded firing pattern, which has been great in the past, but with the strike team itself is actually a little bit less effective than you'd like. So even if they were both functioning properly, you'd actually prefer the firing pattern of something like a Northcutt to that of a Sanctus for the interceptor strike team.
Ah, that's really bad. But hey, it's Scopely. What can you do, right?
We can yell.
You guys done yet?
Oh, we were just going to talk about some really old math, but yeah, no, we're done.
Completely pivoting to anything that doesn't matter. Space Job coming out in February. Pre-order it. You should. Really hilarious.
Sounds like a porn.
What is it? You weren't here last week, Kirk, but it was written by David A. Goodman, who worked on...
I followed it, and I do apologize for not being here. My wife is out of town for work for a few weeks, so it's kind of hard. Like, I keep jumping on and off here because of my toddler, so it's kind of difficult. But yeah, no, I was following it, and I saw that, and it does look pretty funny.
Anyways, we can swerve to a completely random topic now. I think we've ranted enough.
How about, you know, I don't know. I don't think any of you nerds play the Pokemon series anymore.
Haven't played actually. So since we have young kids, right? My kid's into Pokemon now, and I started playing Pokemon Yellow with him, and God, it really works poorly on a computer nowadays. But yeah, his favorite was Metapod. Likes to watch me battle a Metapod with a Pikachu.
Watch out for those Diglets.
The only thing I was gonna say is because it's you know, it's gaming. Relevant is just that the new Pokemon came out and it was supposed to be this big, huge push in a different direction. Because, you know, Pokemon back in the day was very linear. You know, you had to go through a certain way and go to certain gyms at certain times. Well, this one, you can just do whatever you want. And I guess the game, it's coded to recognize your skill level or whatever, and then it adjusts the power of where you're going accordingly. So you can go to any gym you want. You can do wherever, and then based upon your level in the game or whatever like that, it automatically adjusts the power level of the gym leaders and the trainers and stuff like that. I'm not 100% sure because I've only been playing it since Friday, so I'm not exactly 100% sure. But
you found a game that has working out in the game. I just think that's great.
Well, it's Pokemon gym where it's basically dog fighting. You know, that's what Pokemon is. It's just dog fighting.
It's going to the gym even in this game. Gotta lift, bro.
That's right. Don't skip leg day, Kirk.
I just fucking like squatted like 400 yesterday. So suck my ass.
Not after you do the squat, man. No thanks.
There's a four-point buck sitting about 20 yards from me in my front yard.
Shoot that motherfucker. Anyway, so this was supposed to be the big look. It's an open world now, and it's, you know, make your own decisions and do what you want to do. It's supposed to be this big deal. And the Game Rant article said something along the lines of, Pokemon players upset about PS1 level graphics because the graphics are so terrible. Shit's phasing in and out of existence. It's super glitchy. It's just, it's really, really bad. The game is solid itself, like the idea behind it and the mechanics, but the game is super, super bad. So anyway, I just have that to say. I don't know if anybody actually plays that shit, but
I'm just curious how you progress through the game because yeah, you're right. Normally in most Pokemon games, you have to fulfill certain tasks and get certain moves before you can move on to the next phase, the next city, the next town, or whatever. How does that work where you have your eight gyms, you have your places where you need to go, You can complete your badges before you battle the antagonist.
You basically, because it's like, it's open world, so it's just like Fallout, Skyrim, Breath of the Wild, whatever, you know, like the end point is the end point, right? Like the end of the game is this, but you can do shit out of order or whatever order you choose. So like you can go battle this gym first and then go, there's these things called Titans, and you go battle this Titan, and then somebody else could go, well, I don't want to go that way. I'm going to battle this gym first. And then this, you know, I can go this way. And then so you can do all these different things out of order. The only thing I haven't figured out is apparently the idea is that the game itself it's coded to know that as you progress, the other where you go should hypothetically sort of level match, right? So like whatever was kind of supposed to be the air quotes first gym, you don't go to that when you go to this other gym and you make that the first gym. Well, then the game then beefs up the Pokemon for this gym leader that you were initially supposed to go to. So it's supposed to do that, I think. However, I've also run into Pokemon out in the wild that were like ridiculously strong for no fucking reason. So I don't know. It honestly feels like this game probably needed to stay in the oven for another couple months before they released it. And they're getting a lot of backlash on it. People are already calling for Nintendo, like, dude, you need to come out with a new fucking console. That shit is outdated. The graphics are ass, which I'm not one of those graphic nerds, but
are they complaining about the levels and the different relative levels, Kirk? Or are they complaining about the graphics? The only thing I've seen is graphics complaint.
It's mostly there's some glitching stuff. Like there's an online feature. It's actually really cool. You can actually play with your friends. Like you can jump into a group and you guys can go through the world together. And then you can do different shit. Like one of my buddies, he's like, hey, I'm going to fly over here and do this. And I was like, I'm going to go to the other side of the map and do this. But we were in the same server essentially, right? Like we were on the same thing. Like we can pass by each other and interact with each other. And so there's a really cool social element there. The game itself, the idea behind it, the mechanics are great, but it's, I mean, to put it in terms that you would understand, it feels like Scopely released this game. Like, the idea behind it is great.
Are we still talking Pokemon?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Please, Scopely, if you're listening, do not buy Pokemon. First of all, you can't afford it. Second of all, please.
Scopely would never in their lives, if Scopely saved up all the money they've ever made off of their games, they still wouldn't be able to afford to buy Pokemon.
I know, they're sending all those Marvel Strike Force dollars. But yeah, you're right. That'd be crazy. You have to buy Nintendo, right? Because they're platforms.
Well, that, you know, you understand, people understand, like, Nintendo, a lot of these other game developers and a lot of these other franchise owners and stuff like that, that have the rights to all these, they're whores. You know, if you pay the right amount of money, they'll license their products to you and you can make it. Nintendo has had people throw millions and millions of dollars at them. And they're like, nah, we just don't think that's good for our brand. Go fuck yourself. Nintendo, as far as their brand is concerned, they really guard themselves. You know, everybody's going to put out bad products from now and then, but for the most part, Nintendo doesn't do what a lot of other places do. And the Pokemon company doesn't either. Game Freak, the Pokemon company.
They did license it to Niantic for the Pokemon Go game.
You look how wildly successful it is.
Yes, it was.
I mean, Pokemon Go, so that's how I got my wife into it.
Yeah, even though they licensed it, they may have had creative control, say, on it, that sort of thing. Like, places do tend to try to protect their brand. I mean, we talk about that with, like, obviously they have probably been more hands-off, or they might have complaints, but I imagine CBS, for example, or Paramount, whatever the fuck it is, technically could put the hammer on Scopely if they wanted, if they felt that Scopely was ruining their brand.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of fine print in a lot of those licensing agreements that, you know, shit starts turning south. We have certain options that are available to us. Nintendo generally puts out quality products. The actual Nintendo titles, right? Like, not like the third-party stuff that gets released on their platform, but like Nintendo titles, Mario titles, Zelda titles, you know, Pokemon titles, things like that. Those games are pretty much always fucking solid. You might not like that type of game because it's the gameplay is not what you're into, because it's not a whatever it is. It's not a particular, it's not a traditional Pokemon game or whatever, but the game itself is squared away. The mechanics are sound and everything works as intended. That's why people are really upset about this one, because that's not like Nintendo to have super glitchy shit. It's very, very rare for one of their big titles to have something like that. So that's why it is such a big deal where people are like, well, you know, it's just the graphics. Yeah, it is, but it's part of a bigger problem because it, you know, it's one of those things where it's like it's showing that they're kind of going in a bad direction. So anyway.
When they released, what was the last generation I played? Which one was Ruby Sapphire?
That was on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Game Boy Advance. That was like the last major one that I really like actively played. And they did an amazing job with that game. And I did play whatever the version of Diamond and Pearl is, the third version. Can't remember what that was called.
The Shining one?
Yeah, I did briefly play that one for a bit. And everything, you're right, everything was always on point. There was nothing ever wrong with the game. Except that the complaints were it was a little too easy. You know, like most Pokemon games were a little too easy.
Cool. The old school ones were actually quite difficult when you start talking about like first and second generation. They were difficult. And even in the third generation, there was some difficulty there. You definitely had to, like, you would do the linear, because it's a linear progression, right? There's not much deviation from the main path. You go this way, this route, this town, this town, this town, this town. But you would still come up on places where it was like, holy shit, I'm getting my ass kicked. And then you got to go, like, you know, battle a bunch of wild Pokemon on the grass for, you know, a couple days to train your shit up and go back. But yeah, it is pretty easy. The new ones are. Excuse me. And that's the gripe. And then the gripe is, you know, hey, we have all these other console companies, just to get away from the Pokemon thing. You got all these other console companies. You got Microsoft and Sony and stuff like that. And they're making... They have all these really high-tech consoles and everything like that, you know, 4K capability, and, you know, it'll rub your balls while you play these games and all these crazy stuff that they're coming out with. And then you have this Nintendo Switch that's like 900 graphics and, you know, just they're kind of like, look, we get it. You wanted to do a hybrid between handheld and console, but your hardware is vastly outmatched and you're still pushing out all these new ideas on this console that as of next year is going on 6 years old. You know, it's time for you to do something else. And I think that Nintendo has always been a company that has milked the shit out of it. Like, you look at Nintendo games, they go on sale far less than games from Xbox and PlayStation. You know, you got used Nintendo Switch games that are still like $40 and $50, and they came out like 4 or 5 years ago. So they've always been one to milk it, but I think they're getting... I think people have had enough of it, because those of us who are a Nintendo fan, I've always been a Nintendo fan, all, you know, like... We were a Nintendo house when I was growing up, so I've always been a Nintendo. I like their first-party titles. But they're getting to the point now where it's kind of like they're kind of getting a little ridiculous with it, where they're trying to milk it a little too hard, and those of us that are Nintendo fans, we're kind of sick of it. We're like, all right, dude, it's time to kind of join the 21st century here.
I just want to know which console will rub my balls, because...
Thank you.
I'm getting that for Christmas.
Yeah, that's the one I'm into. I mean, you think it'd be the Nintendo Switch just by the name, right?
I see what you did there. That was clever. I mean, I'm not a super big gamer. I'm into gaming. I like, you know, what I like, though. I don't have all the consoles. I'm still rocking an Xbox One that I got, like, you know, fucking 9 or 10 years ago. Or whenever the fuck it came out. I think it came out in 2013 or 14 or whatever it was. It's getting to the point now where you're pushing out these new consoles. You don't even have you can't even keep up with production. Like, finding a PlayStation 5 is apparently a pain in the ass. I don't know. I haven't looked for one. And like, Sony's already talking about coming out with a new console. They're talking about coming out with a PS5 Slim.
Yeah, but like, again, that's their business model, though, Kirk, is sell hardware, right? And I think that's fair. They do their business. But Nintendo's really always been, we have these platformers, they're unique to us, we have this brand. I agree that they could probably update their hardware, but like, as a kid, my Nintendo console was always just super inferior physically, like, you know, graphically, physically, bit width wise from all the other consoles that were on the market.
Yeah, I mean, the GameCube was pretty good as far as for what it was. But yeah, I mean, they were still pushing fucking Super Nintendo titles up to, you know, I mean, when did they come out with the Super Nintendo? Was it 90 or 91?
Oh, God, I'm not going to Google that for us. But yeah,
I can't remember. But anyway, they had that, and then they were pushing that. They were still, when they came out the Nintendo 64, they were still fucking making Super Nintendo titles. When you had the PlayStation, you know, that was vastly outperforming it, and Sega was vastly outperforming it. Sega made a lot of bad business decisions, but Yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess I never thought about it in terms of that. They've always been very, like, it's about the game titles, right? Not necessarily the hardware. It's about the titles that they produce. So, yeah, it does make sense. But what's happening is that you're seeing that those people that grew up with Nintendo, which, like, somebody like me, like, I grew up with, like, we had an NES, we had an SNES, and we stayed with all the Nintendo. I've owned every, with the exception of the Wii U, because I kind of got out of video games for a while, I've owned every Nintendo system. The original Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Advance SP, DS, DS Lite, DS 3DX, all, you know, all the shit. I've had all of them. But you're getting to the point where the people like me, who have by and large been the people that are buying Nintendo consoles, we're, like I said, you're kind of seeing where they're getting fed up. They're like, God, you're feeding us shit. Like, your console is $350. I can buy a fucking Xbox for like $300. And it's got far better processing power. I can play far more, you know, complicated graphically complicated games and a lot of these other titles that are super popular. And, you know, look at the Switch. You can't play Modern Warfare 2 or whatever the new one that was that came out. You can't play these games, and those are becoming more popular. And the kid, even like the kids, that all their friends are playing that. So it's getting to the point where Nintendo is going to have to realize that their 1980s, 1990s business model is becoming outdated, and they're going to have to do something.
Oh, they're still making money hand over fist. So
as compared to if you're looking at a shift in the gaming industry, there's a lot more people, even anecdotally, people that I know that are like, you still play your Switch? I'm like, yeah, man, play it every day. And they're like, ah, man, I'm thinking about selling mine. And then there's a lot of people that are like that. Look at some of the major gaming reporting, like Spawnwave, the gaming channel. He always publishes the numbers and stuff like that. Here lately, I mean, the Nintendo Switches have been selling, but that's because they've had the game that come out, right? Everybody was like, oh, this new Pokemon, it's going to be a fucking game changer. You know, it's going to be open world, and it's going to be totally different, and it's going to be nothing you've ever seen before, and this, that, and the other. And then so people go out, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm excited about it. Maybe I'll get a console. So then they spend $350 on a console, $60 on this fucking game, to realize that it has the fucking same graphics as, like, Jumpin' Jack Flash from the fucking PS1 era. But in the famous words of Strange Kirk, I digress.
All right, anybody else?
No, we discussed that shit long enough. What else we got in space news?
Space news!
Darius, I thought about you yesterday. I was doing something in the kitchen, and I was flipping through YouTube, and I was watching this thing about the Venus landers from the Soviet Union.
Oh, yeah. That was an interesting project.
That shit was... I didn't realize they launched 14 of those motherfuckers.
And they got, like, two on the ground, something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, and it was actually pretty cool that, you know... I guess the Soviet Union holds the title for the only...
They're the only ones that got to touch our Venus, yeah.
Yeah, they're the only ones that have pictures from Venus, too, and they're actually pretty decent pictures.
They are pretty cool. As a science nerd, space nerd, yeah, for sure. Like, that stuff was pretty dope.
Yeah, it was like a 20 or 30-minute video, and the guy was going into, like, how they manufactured it, how they were, like, testing it and figuring out what worked, what didn't, how to prevent them from getting cracked, and the coolant systems they were using, and... I thought that shit was pretty interesting.
Venus is gnarly to land on. It is surprising that out of all the countries in the world, the Soviet Union was the only one to actually physically land on Venus.
Yeah, I think they were saying that, like, they had to build their pods to withstand like 30 atmospheres or something. It's fucking nuts, the fact that, you know, everybody makes fun of Soviet Union for making shit, but they're the only ones that figured out how to actually be able to land something on a planet that would crush everything.
To be honest, their space program was top notch, but everything else they produced was awful.
Well, yeah, they funneled when they realized that they were competing with the Western world for space. They were like, "Fucking put everything in the space program. Fuck nuclear reactors. They're fine. We don't need to worry about those. They'll be fine."
Graphite tips, man.
That is pretty interesting. I wouldn't mind going to at some point in my life going to the where is that place where they launched all the was it Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
They got the big museum there. I always thought that would be pretty fucking cool to see. That's obviously not going to happen anytime soon, but maybe in the future.
So anybody else got any space news?
I mean, watching the Artemis launch was pretty cool.
I was actually going to say, Darius, I'm sure you paid attention to that. I unfortunately did not.
I mean, they're doing the NASA thing, right? Where they're sending unmanned thing. They're going to do their orbit or whatever they're going to do with it, and they're going to send a follow on with, you know, it's a very NASA-esque slow pace, slow burn. But Artemis was the brightest thing ever in the sky by man, I guess. And it was just some really cool nerdy BS about it. But like, I'm glad it finally went off. I'm glad it went off without a hitch. That made me happy. And if that meant they delayed it as long as they had to, sure. Okay. Congrats, NASA.
Anybody excited about, is it 2024 where they're supposed to launch the ship that goes to Europa?
I think that might be pushed in a schedule somewhere. But yeah, I think Europa's the next couple of years. Yeah, and Europa's really interesting. That will be cool.
I'm curious to see what the underground oceans look like, because I think that's the only, not the only, but I think that's the only moon / planet in our solar system that has water besides Earth.
Liquid water, yeah. Liquid water, for sure, yeah. I mean, because, you know, there are a lot of other icy bodies.
Well, I was just going to say there's a lot of that have ice on it, or evidence of ice.
Right, and Europa is the only one with liquid water, with supposedly large subterranean oceans.
Yeah, I mean, which we infer from the fact that there are these geysers that have an H2O-like signature to them based on the return rate of the, you know, so it could be some other type of gelid under high pressure, you know, water-like substance. I mean, it could be a lot of things, but yeah, it's super cool. I'm interested to see what it comes. I would love to know what, well, I mean, it'll be really cool to see when it comes back, the day it comes back, yes.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Not all liquid's water.
Well, yeah, like, for example, yeah. Titan, all that shit's like methane. It's like liquid methane.
Delicious liquid methane.
So what you're saying is if you go to Titan, do not try to light a cigar, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, don't. it looks like a proto-Earth, but all the scenery around it is all noxious gases.
It'd be like some Klingon-level disaster.
Right, Praxis.
Straight up Praxis, man. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it was just like, what happened? Well, fucking SK fucking tried to light a cigar and celebrate, and now his bits and pieces of him are drifting through the asteroid belt.
I've just blamed Bender, man. Blame Bender.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like fucking Bender's like, it's like, Bender, you can't withstand that explosion unless you're like Bolomite or whatever. He's like, I'm 40%.
I'm 40% Dolomite. Agreed.
I'm back, baby.
Actually, for all the nerds, probably all the nerds know this, but like all the numbers that Futurama has ever put on screen, it has been found that is part of some sort of logical, physical, you know, manifestation of the theories that we currently have floating around.
Oh yeah, they use nerd science, the latest nerd science. Plus, if you read the Futurama language, you can get some really funny Easter eggs.
Is it basically just a cipher, the Futurama language?
Yeah, it's a straight cipher. Yeah.
Okay, so it's just a one-to-one cipher?
Yep.
Yeah, I miss the human tubes that they had. Yeah, that just transport you to all these places.
I like the person when he jumps into the, where Fry jumps into the, he's like, Crosstown Express, he just launched out the other fucking side. that show, some of the stuff, it had no business being as funny as it was, like with Leela, like her call sign, 1BDI.
Right, or her apartment number, for God's sakes. One eye, right? Come on.
Yeah.
Or how she was like playing Blurn's ball, and it's like all the whole numbers have been retired, so you only have fractions left.
Like, yeah, they're gone. So much good like industry humor.
So I'm like, says she's the pitcher, and she's like, take your eye off the ball. You mean keep your eye on the ball? No, take your eye off the ball. She was the only one that actually did anything at Planet Express.
Well, yeah, I mean, and same thing in Married with Children.
Butt says, actually, without oxygen, I don't know if the methane on Titan would be able to ignite. Well, Putz, why don't you travel to Titan and let us know?
God damn it, Putz. You know, you fucking nerdy bastard, you professor motherfucker. Why can't you just let us have our fun?
I feel like we could just fill a chamber with methane and then try to light it without having to go all the way to Titan.
Don't get crazy, Boom. We have to go to Titan first.
That's fair. I apologize. Fuck that. I want to go to, was it Neptune that rains diamonds? I want to go there and just scoop up some rain.
Might be Uranus. I don't know.
What are you talking about? It rains diamonds.
All right, Putz. So let's say if I were to be able to introduce oxygen enough to ignite something, would the methane then ignite? Or would it still require more oxygen?
It would probably, in my understanding, I do believe in that chemical reaction. It requires, for each molecule of methane, it requires a one diatomic molecule of O2, a one-to-one to actually burn. So you would need just as much oxygen as you would methane for it to actually burn.
So, okay. All right. Well, okay. All right. So.
Well, we can just take Megamade from Suck to Blow.
There you go.
Just fixing to say that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I'm surrounded by a bunch of assholes here.
Keep firing, assholes.
We've been jammed.
Raspberry.
Lone Star.
Jesus.
I'm going to have to watch that fucking...
Yeah.
It's like, I'm a Mog. Half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend.
Not in here. This is a Mercedes.
Speaking of Mel Brooks, did you guys hear that History of the World Part 2 is being made now?
I had not.
We did not.
That would be great if it was done, you know, faithfully. I'm not sure you can get Biggest Dickus on screen anymore, though. I don't know.
Speaking of which, there's an asteroid off the coast of, is it Jupiter? That's worth $20 quadrillion. I wouldn't mind just you know, flying over there, grabbing some precious metals and coming back here.
Yeah, I think that's what we saw what happened in Futurama when the diamond freaking asteroid went pie, though, Ran. Everyone just got frozen in space time, remember?
Diamond asteroid?
I'm willing to take that risk.
Fair enough. I got to buy some packs, man. So let's go get some diamond helium. Yeah.
There was that movie recently. It wasn't that good, but it was like Don't Look Up or something. But they chose not to deflect the asteroid heading to Earth because they determined there was some monetary value to the asteroid. Then it killed us all.
Yep. That's so basically what would happen too, man.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember back, because I'm just thinking about Futurama and shit like that, like these old cartoons. You guys remember back when Adult Swim would do shit like, we're gonna show you the entire movie of whatever, but we're gonna put it in like a fucking, like a 1/4-inch by 1/4-inch square at the top left of the screen during normal programming.
I remember they did that a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like they showed the whole movie, but like it was in the top left screen. You couldn't hear anything. There were no subtitles, and it was just like this little tiny block where they showed the whole movie.
That's fucking weird.
Yeah, that is a William Street. That is a straight up William Street fuck you to whoever they were doing that to.
I mean, that's technically contractually fulfilling an obligation that they had.
Right. If they had to broadcast X amount of content with Y categorization or whatever, like, yeah, it's like doing the 1 hour public access stuff on your normal media channels, right?
That was just too fucking funny. I remember, I think they did that to one of the Futurama movies and they did it to one of the other ones.
Yeah, and now the guy that was responsible for making that Star Trek episode of Futurama, he's writing Space Job.
Yeah, I don't think we caught it to that point before earlier, but yeah, that's the guy who did Space Job, and did he work on Lower Decks too, Tech?
I don't think he worked on Lower Decks. He worked on the Orville, and he worked on...
That's right, it was the
Orville. And he worked on Star Trek Enterprise.
It's been a long time.
Man, speaking of which, that song is so polarized. Like, either you love it or you absolutely can't stand it.
My time is finally here.
And I honestly don't know why. I'm like the only person that's like, it's fine. It's Star Trek. I don't care.
Yeah, it's awful. It's awful.
And I think that was a third attempt of Faith of the Heart being the Star Trek Enterprise theme song. They tried to make it the theme song for DS9, Voyager, and finally they got on Enterprise.
Also, though, when they did the Lower Decks episode of where they fly the Phoenix, they have so many of these like that era tropes, right? It was fun. I don't think they played the Enterprise song though.
No, they played, what did they play? Oh no, they played the same one that they played when the Phoenix took off in First Contact.
Oh, it was great, man. It was better. It was almost better than flying around Deep Space Nine, and looked like we're impressed by the pylons.
Yeah, buy us some time. Oh, well.
I'll just keep going, nice and slow.
I will say for Deep Space Nine, for how big Tarok Nor was supposed to be, it felt incredibly small.
Yeah, I think scale-wise, it looked like the Kali-class ships were almost Galaxy-class ship size next to Taric Nor.
It looks like a goddamn bicycle wheel with some pegs coming out in a few different locations.
You know, contrast that with, you know, Babylon 5 being a 5-mile-long, you know, blue turn space. That felt big. Like, that actually felt like a big freaking structure.
Yeah, but it looked like it was made by a child.
It was made by a child.
Gave my kids some Legos, and this is what they came up with. So this is what we're going with.
That's actually a real concept.
To be fair, that is canon.
Yeah, it's not canon. It's like the fact that it's 5 miles long is considered, it's what's called an O'Neill cylinder, and it has different rates of rotation to create artificial gravity.
Yes, and it's animated so well.
For a 90s animation, it was amazing. But
it was
2022, looking at 320 by 240 animation blown up. It looks, yes.
And it just does not upsample. It would have to be entirely re-rendered to make it modern, which is, I mean, that's a project for someone with passion for it, I hope, because I love the universe, you know that. But yeah, it just does not hold up at all.
People have offered to re-CGI the scenes.
Yeah, but again, there's the licensing problems, right? Like the JMS, you know, there's still a bunch of ugly weirdness around B5's licensing.
That's true, because he owns the rights to the movies, but I think Warner Brothers, or TNT rather, owns the rights to the series.
To the series, yeah. The same thing that happened with Bloody Stargate, right?
Yes. Who owns the rights to the movies?
The movies are for Babylon 5. JMS still owns those.
No, I'm talking about Stargate. Stargate. Who owns the rights to the movies for Stargate? Is it Devlin?
I want to say it's a Warner. I don't know. I have to check.
Does Devlin still own the rights to the movies?
That would be interesting.
Because he was talking about making a trilogy, and the first movie was like the first part of the trilogy. But that project kind of died in 2019.
It's MGM.
Oh, no.
Studio Canal, MGM, it looks like. Yep.
Anybody in the audience have anything they want to say? We're running out of shit. We're just fucking Googling shit and discussing it, too.
MGM is being sold to fucking Amazon.
Yeah. Which is really strange, because Amazon is not making money hand over fist right now. But, you know, whatever. I mean, there's still plenty of money there, right? There's plenty of capital. It's just they're not of the big internet brands that you think are big internet brands, just casually. Like, they're not the net profit company. I mean, they're making money, and it's just not like Apple is making money.
Well, the only thing they make money on is AWS. Everything else loses money.
That's correct, yes. They lose so much money on Amazon Prime, it's not even funny. But the Amazon Prime is basically their business trap. But I'll shut up about other things, because they're not Star Trek related, I guess. Oh, except that you can use Amazon coins to buy stuff if you watch DJ's really complicated means to do so.
We love you, DJs.
We do indeed, sir.
Let's talk about Twitter.
Let's not.
I will say, the only subject, since you fucking brought it up, the only thing that I fucking think is hilarious is that for so long, the social media joints have made having a blue check mark like this holy grail, and they've turned it into this super mystical thing. Like, oh, you got a blue check mark account to comment on your account. You're blessed by God. And I think it's hilarious that Elon and the gang have completely undermined that. I just find it hilarious.
The one funny story out of this whole Twitter disaster, and first of all, Twitter needs to die along with the rest of social media, but there was somebody that paid to get a blue check mark on Eli Lilly's official Twitter account.
Yeah, that was dangerous, man. Oof.
And it stated, if you haven't seen this, go check it out. It stated that blue check mark Eli Lilly account, we are going to give away free insulin to everybody.
Chaos ensued.
Oh, yes. That was hilarious.
And 24 hours later, or whatever it was, like they got a hold of that account or Eli Lilly's official Twitter handle, whatever fucking Eli Lilly sucks as a company, but they're like, I'm sorry, we will not be giving out free insulin to everyone. And it's just so ironic because the founder of the guy who in Canada who
Yeah, the patent owner
who sequenced insulin, who figured out how to make insulin, license it away for free because he thought nobody should be in complications because of diabetes. And yet in the United States, there's only 3 freaking companies that make insulin and you have to pay gazillions of dollars for.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with dialysis tech, right? The dialysis juice is, you know, it's guaranteed paid by the HMO Act in the 70s, signed by that rigid liberal Richard Nixon. And it's a thing where, like, there's no incentive there, right? So it's like, if it was free, there'd still be some way they'd graft us, you know?
Right.
So they're just charging us for it anyway directly, which is stupid and terrible. If you can't, when people are making decisions about their insulin and their food budget or whatever else they're making decisions on, like, I'll just half my insulin. That's not how it works, man. They should be able to use as much as they need based on their prescription.
I knew a guy. We're sitting there one night, and it was like 28 degrees outside. And he was you're not going off that. He was sweating while he was eating. And I was like, dude, it is freaking cold. What the hell are you sweating for? And he's like, well, you know, I'm diabetic and I can't afford the insulin. So I have nerve damage. Yeah. And so so when he eats, he, you know, various things in his body don't work right. And I was like, what the hell? And he's like, yeah, he's like, I can't afford the insulin.
I'm just wondering, you know, and I'd have to, you know, this would be prefaced with, you know, call a lawyer or whatever. The original patent is long since expired. And I was just wondering, if you make insulin under that original patent and just sell it to doctors, what's the ramifications?
I think that the patent, they have made novel modifications to the insulin they resell under their brands, haven't they, Tech?
Yeah, no, I know. That's and you're right, right? So I think Eli Lilly and whoever was Pfizer and somebody else, right? They have like their fifth generation patents, right, for their novel moieties that is associated with insulin. But effectively, you could still make it under the original auspices of you inoculate E. coli with your specific gene and you express the original insulin that you have. So my thing is, if you make like a biologics version of a compound pharmacy and just sell it to doctors, outside of, you know, all those other companies threatening you with amazing lawsuits.
Yeah, they would keep you from market long enough to make you to choke you out, probably, right?
Well, that'd be their goal, yes. But you should be able, in theory, just to produce it under the original released.
Correct. That's what I'm thinking, right? What's to prevent? And by no means, okay, full stop. This is not easy work. I'm just saying, you would need a lot of various types of incubators and roller bottles and bioreactors and downstream processes, and you need a lot of GMP controls and proper testing of your insulin. Don't get me wrong, that's still very necessary. But I'm just saying, if somebody had the technical wherewithal to do that and put in, you know, like $1 million into the organization and literally market it to doctors for, say, all right, I'll sell you this vial of insulin for like $7, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's some there, Tech, I think, but like, it's more than, we're talking nine-figure investments, right? Easily. I mean, maybe not for proof of concept, but for scale of actual marketing, sure.
Andrew, I know that, you know, the whole generic thing. I'm just saying, let me kind of break this down a little bit. So the difference between a manufacturing company with an approved drug and a compound pharmacy is, in order to market your drug without restriction, you need to go through the FDA approval process, and you know that could take years and millions of dollars for all the studies and what you got to pay for. The compound pharmacy route, why it's so appealing to a lot of people, especially those without insurance, is that you don't need to do any of that. You just need to make the drug for the patient. And it circumvents the entire system and the pharmacist that signs off on the documentation and the doctor that prescribes it, their kind of licenses are on the line for you to get that medication. And it's a lot less expensive, especially if you don't have insurance. If you do have insurance, pharmacy benefit managers and all this other shit, you know, HMO, PPO shit gets in the loop and fucks that whole thing up.
There's Don Druste's talking in chat, Tech. Take a look.
I know. Yeah, I know. I mean, but this is the point I'm trying to make, what she's saying, where as soon as a brand expires, there's a generic that quickly takes it. I'm saying that even when a brand like insulin, which is not easy to produce, goes, you know, expires per se.
So Tech, essentially you're saying a compounding pharmacy with a compounding pharmacist properly licensed could take the E. coli, match the genetic marker to the patient, express this insulin in quantity. I mean, like, that seems like that's a lot there too. Like, that's many steps.
Insulin is not specific based on the genetic markers of the individual.
Okay, that's good to know.
You can mass produce the insulin because insulin is insulin. You could use it for anybody.
Yeah, but like what would happen, Tech, is like I think you'd end up with like Eli Lilly saying that they have Techron brand fuel accelerator in their insulin, you know, kind of like you get gas companies do, because that's what would happen.
And that's great. And if you're a diabetic with nice insurance and you decide you want the Techron bank, right? But if you're the dude that's, as Kirk was mentioning, you know, sitting there sweating because they can't afford insulin and their body can't process food that well, you'll take the knockoff gas, you know, to none. So
I agree. I love the notion, because I too have friends and family and other people that have had to make those trade-off decisions between like healthy life and barely life, right, without insulin.
Yeah, this is such an interesting question to me. And Andrew says, I don't believe that compound pharmacies can make and sell those RXs that are available on the market. They can absolutely do so. You can absolutely go.
Yes, they definitely, because my wife gets ketamine, actually. She microdoses that for depression, but she gets that from a compound pharmacy, but you can, it's on the market. You don't have to do it. That's just where she gets it.
Right. So there's two types of compounding pharmacies. There's a 503A, which is based on the individual's needs, right? So if there's a market, if there's a product that's not available, say you're combining acetaminophen and caffeine together, and that's not currently available, that's what a compound pharmacy will do. That's a 503A. 503B is an outsourcing facility that will mass produce drugs that either are approved or aren't approved, and they could sell them as such under the care of a licensed pharmacist.
So I think maybe what Andre's saying is that, like, you know, a compound pharmacy can't make, you know, NyQuil, for example. Like, that shit's still, actually, it may be generic. I don't know. Pick something where
NyQuil's an OTC, so that doesn't matter.
I'm not great with what drugs are and aren't patented, and so I'm just trying to use a simple kind of. The point I'm making is something that's actually patented and owned, and the process to create it and the, you know, recipe, whatever, is not widespread. Like, even if they got it, they may not be able to legally create it. But we're not talking like insulin. That's like, the guy discovered insulin like 70 years ago, more than that, maybe. I don't even, like, it's free and open, and they should be able to produce it without any issue. Can they make the specific insulin that, say, Illy, whatever is making with their extra little additives and stuff? No, but so what?
Right. That's my point. Like, for example, Lipitor is long since gone generic. Patents have already expired on Lipitor. You can make Lipitor in a compound pharmacy and sell it as a Lipitor generic or whatever, atorvastatin calcium. If you don't have insurance, it's a lot more appealing than getting the actual brand or the generic. But yeah, no, that's an interesting question to posit to an attorney. Make insulin under the original patent and sell it to compound pharmacies or doctors. I mean, outside of the, you know, potential legal quandary that may happen.
Yeah, I think also to maybe get this right for Andrew, I think what she's saying too is that the compounding pharmacy would need to receive the order with a formulaic for the things that would need to be different than whatever the normally available commercial insulin would be, right?
Well, yes. It depends if you're a 503A or a 503B, right? So yeah, so 503A, you need a very specific patient file for the very specific formulation that you need. Insulin notwithstanding, whatever, right? Combine three different drugs, four different drugs, whatever that's not available, that's a 503A. 503B will make a bunch of product, and eventually they'll get the orders that would be fulfilled.
Oh, so they can warehouse it, basically. I mean, in fact, not, you know what I mean, but they can hold a quantity on special order. Okay. Well, then they could fill it through any pharmacy and just order it from the 503B.
That's what I mean. You have like one central location. And then for people without insurance, the doctor just sends them to, okay, XYZ company over there has got cheap insulin. You can pay cash, like Mark Cuban's cost plus whatever fucking company, right? Similar model to that. It's like, just make that product and point people in that direction instead of having, you're paying stupid premiums. And on top of that, with your co-pays for your insulin for, like a $700 stick of insulin, you could get it for like $10 at XYZ pharmacy down the street. Anyways, that's just my rantings.
Speaking of being off topic, so that was great tech.
Yeah.
I think insulin is very key to STFC and Star Trek in general.
Maybe to fans, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, if you keep people, if they don't have to spend their money on insulin, they could spend their money on the game.
Get Scopely behind this right now.
Right, exactly. Like Scopely, if you're listening, need about $1.2 million in investment, and I can make all the insulin for everybody in the world.
And we have to match that with $1.2 million in packs that we can distribute. Thank you.
Well, that would be interesting. It's like, I'm gonna go research that after a while because I know people that have approached me before about making insulin and who have the expertise and the wherewithal to make it. And I was just thinking about that, because at the time I was still going through my lawsuits. So I was like, I don't want another one or another three or however many there are. But it got me thinking. Or, you could do what most sensible people do, run across the border to Canada or Mexico and buy it there, bring it across.
Yeah, the fact that that's a thing that we need to do is...
Never okay to just be like, I'm going to order it from a Canadian pharmacy on the internet. That's all those things are just, they're shitty workarounds that people without resources shouldn't have to make to get basic healthcare and life-saving shit for their lives.
Well,
yep.
In Medicare, again, if you're on Medicare, they have this thing called Part B, I believe, where it's like any life-saving medication is covered, no matter the cost. So that kind of exacerbates the problem, right?
But yeah, Part D covers the prescriptions, Andra. But yeah, Part B, yeah, we go. Yeah, thank you. Of course, we would know this. You would know this. Yeah, this is a complicated, annoying.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, didn't California announce that they were going to make their own insulin?
Yep.
I forgot about that. That's right. California is pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into this fucking facility that'll probably never get built.
The industry is, this is a weird one, Tech. Like, some of the payers are interested in this because they don't like working with PBMs because PBMs are just a nightmare. So I don't know. There are a couple of like big payer brands that have come in on the side of this. And if that's the case, that could move the needle, right? It could make this happen,
Well, I'm more than happy to do it for the state of California if they would bear the brunt of the lawsuits.
And you guys make fun of me and SK for going off tangent.
I don't know what you're talking about. Like we said, like a lot of Star Trek fans have diabetes, and so we're just
I feel like that wasn't called for, sir.
Shots fired, man.
Luckily, I do not have diabetes yet, at least not that I know of.
Got the beaties.
My dad had it.
Well, my dad died from it, but yeah.
So did my dad.
That's not tragic.
Vascular disease from smoking.
Yeah.
Is it type 2 or type 1?
Type 2.
Type 2?
2.
They just need to exercise more?
Well, it started out as type 2 for my old man, and then turned into type 1 because he didn't take care of himself.
What did you just say? I don't think type 2 can turn into type 1.
Oh, wait. Sorry. I got him back. It was type turned into type 2. Apologies. I'm not an expert on diabetes.
Okay. All right. Type 1 is different. Type 1 is regardless of your physical condition, you're going to need insulin for the rest of your life. Type 2 is you're fucking fat and you need to get off the couch.
Well, he started off as... No. That's not totally. Some people get diabetes just from diet, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean fat. It just means that they ate too much stupid shit and didn't eat healthy stuff. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, they're somewhat like my grandfather. also had diabetes, but he was actually relatively skinny. His issue was, you know, he loved sweets, of course, though. And even though he did exercise a fair amount and stayed skinny, apparently he ate too much sweets, and so he built up insulin resistance or something. I don't know exactly. But so, yeah, you don't have to actually be overweight to be diabetic.
No, not at all. Because my dad was never a big man. He just ate stupid shit, I guess. I don't know.
All right, this has been medical talk. I want to thank you.
Yeah, there's really Star Trek content in there. We promise.
The first part of the episode was Star Trek content. The second part went into Pokemon, console games, then went into insulin.
Not that if you're listening at this point in the recording that it would matter, but if you only wanted to hear the Star Trek stuff, as soon as we turn to Pokemon, you could just turn it off. But if you've made it to this point of me telling you that, you already suffered through all the other bullshit. Sucks to suck.
Hey, we talk about stuff that other people won't talk about. We're the not safe for work alternative.
Have you looked at the analytics? How often will actually find our episode?
I have looked at the analytics. They're not terrible. We get, like whatever it is, like 150 to 300 to 500 views a week, whatever.
Right, but how many of those make it all the way through?
Oh, unfortunately, Anchor doesn't give that kind of...
YouTube does, though.
YouTube, but I haven't posted on YouTube in a long time.
I thought they automatically post to YouTube.
No, I have to physically upload it.
Dude, if you walked me through the process, I guarantee I could automate it.
Yeah.
Like, I could automate posting this shit to everything that you post it to.
Well, okay then.
Yeah, it should go out to everything automatically. If you upload it to Anchor, it should just...
Well, Anchor uploads to all the podcast platforms. YouTube is special.
YouTube's video, I understand. But I think even YouTube has a way to do it now for podcasts. I just remember hearing another podcaster talk about it. That's all. So I don't know for sure.
Let's wrap things up here. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Medical Trek Pokemon Talk. I'm TechMan16.
I'm Andy.
I'm Boom.
And SK is LARPing.
And we'll see you guys next time.